Hi, everybody. Joe Conroy. I am an alcoholic. Can you see it? 106 people had under 5 years of sobriety. That's huge. That's huge that you guys are here, and I'm really glad you are. I counted you. I might have been wrong, but 106 people under, and I think there's just under 1,000 people here. That's a 10% rule, right? It's pretty cool. I love being sober. I've been sober since January 1st, 1989. I'm a New Year's baby. I turned 30 this year, and I have had one of the best weekends I've had in a long time. I don't know if you guys know that. Even though I was left at the airport for hours. And you guys don't have a very exciting airport up here, I'll tell you that much. Nothing even happens in TSA at that airport. I was like... But I've met some people that I've known for years, and I just never had a chance to sit and have conversation with them. And even the people I haven't met and the people that I've heard stories about here, it's just moved me. I'm supposed to be the spiritual speaker, if that's what you guys are expecting. Let me tell you a story about I spoke twice in Houston, Danny. Once I was the spiritual speaker on a Sunday morning, and after I spoke, somebody came up and said, "You know, you were supposed to be the spiritual speaker, right?" Oh, okay. And I wasn't? No, you weren't. No. And the other time I told Danny about this. Now, if you haven't figured out, I'm a Yankee. I'm not from San Diego originally. I'm from Boston originally. I bottomed out in Boston, but I got sober in San Diego, really. I had my last geographic in 1988, right after Thanksgiving of 1988. And it was really cool. Oh, I also want to say that, you know, you had a lot of talk about teddy bears this weekend. A lot of talk about teddy bears. And I don't know who put these things up here for everybody up here, but these little Legos, and I put it together when you guys were doing the countdown. It's just a little person giving a hug, you know. So we got little. Now we got the little whatever it is from Rogue Valley, you know, staring at me. I really love it. But really had a great weekend. And I hope I can talk about recovery from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I think that's a really key thing to say, seemingly. Seemingly is the word. I was hopeless when I got here. I love drinking. Up until tonight, I was kind of obsessing on the Shannon's Pub right down the road here over by the hotel, little joint called the Shannon's Pub. The door wasn't open anytime I went by there, but boy, I could smell it. I love drinking up until this day, but, you know, drinking didn't love me at the end. I took my last drink on New Year's Eve, 1988. I didn't know it was going to be my last drink. I didn't think it was going to be my last drink. But what happened weeks before that was I was talking to a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he 12-stepped me. I didn't know what that was going on. I told him I had a problem with drinking, and he 12-stepped me, and I didn't know what 12-step was. But he said something to me that has changed the course of my life, and I've never forgotten about what this man. Now, I didn't like this man at all. I haven't seen him since this time. I thought he was the biggest moron I'd ever met in my life. He was a comedian in Boston, and he just retired as a comedian. He was sober 8 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. I tended bar in Boston for years, and I didn't like people who didn't drink. And if you like that, and I didn't like people who didn't drink at my bar, and this guy would sit there, and I didn't like him. But he said to me, he said, "Joe, there'll come a time when you're done with drinking. If you ask some power greater than yourself for help, you will never have to take another drink as long as you live." Boom. You know, that was not me. That might be good for you, but I don't have those problems, you know. And I just wasn't ready yet. There was a guy in San Diego, Gene Castle, when I first got sober. I don't know if you guys got any cranky old-timers up here in Grants Pass. You probably don't, you know. But, you know, when you're new, everybody's cranky, you know, everybody's happy, you know. But this guy, Gene Castle, used to say there's only two ways you can come to AA, drinking or done drinking. And if you ain't done drinking, I can't help you with your drinking. Well, that's profound, but it was really true. It was like, I was done drinking. And I remember the guy that 12-stepped me said, "Joe, when you're done drinking and you ask some power greater than yourself for help, you'll never have to take another drink as long as you live." I didn't believe it when he said it, but I believe it more and more every single day since I've been sober. I've had 30 years. I wish I could tell you I had 30 years of bliss. I got my big book, my 12 and 12, and I got big print. I wear glasses, and I got big print. But I've been focusing on you guys' thing all weekend here, the preface to the first edition. That little, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Seemingly. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind. I thought it was my wallet, thought it was my job, thought it was the relationships, thought it was the family, but centered in my mind. I was seemingly hopeless of state of mind or body, which means I just had a perception that if everything else was better, my life would get better. It says in the big book a little further down, it says, if we straighten out spiritually, everything else will fall in place. We don't suffer from a material malady. We suffer from a spiritual malady. If we suffered from a material malady, getting a job, getting a relationship, getting money, all that stuff would straighten out my alcoholism. But the spiritual malady, ooh, because we're going to talk about who? God. I was talking to somebody yesterday. I forget what his name was. We had a short conversation. When I was newly sober, somebody told me if I make if I resolve the relationship with the church of my childhood, I'll have a better understanding of the power greater than myself. I had a relationship with religion. I had a resentment with religion. I didn't have a resentment with God. And I was able to go, I'm born and raised Catholic. My mom, God rest her soul, she passed away last year at 100 years old. She turned 100 on May 1st, and on June 12th, she passed away. I was in the hospital on May 1st. They had a big 100-year birthday for her. I had a heart condition going on, like my friend Danny here, and my life has been crap for a whole year. Crap. Heart condition. Two fractured vertebrae, shingles, lost my job. So I could be bitter and resentful. But something happened, and I think we heard talk about it this weekend, the Fellowship of AA, which I didn't like. There's a lot of new people here today, and I know you're probably sitting here and you're doing your job as commitments, and I'm really grateful, especially you guys sitting against the wall, I'm really grateful you guys, because you can have some fun in Alcoholics Anonymous if you join the fun. You can sit outside there and smoke and vape and dupe and whatever the hell else we do outside there now. I don't know what everybody's going on out there, but you can miss what's going on in here. You can come into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and you can puke all over the room and everybody will sit there and be really patient and gentle. And then you're going to get up and you're going to go smoke and dupe and fake or whatever else you're doing outside there, but you're not going to hear the solution to the problem that you have. And the problem is seemingly hopeless. I didn't know that. I came in here with my eyes. I hated the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. Absolutely hated everybody. I just didn't want to drink anymore, and I wanted to be sober. You know what it's like to be sober? Oh, how many people have you been in rooms? You go, how you doing? I'm sober. Have you missed the happy, joyous, and free? No, I haven't. I'm sober. Would you like to share? Oh, I would if they would only call on me. Oh, I got so much to say. Yeah, because I'm sober. How about Joe? Would you like to share? No, I'm fine. Just then the fear riddles up inside of me. I was 9 months sober, and I'm going to a meeting, and it was a woman named Grady O'Hare who was, she was talking, and she was the most foul-mouthed speaker I ever heard in my life. And I don't know if I ever even heard her. I was 9 months sober, and I had made a decision in the middle of that talk that I was going to go drink. I made the decision. And I'm driving a 63 Ford Falcon station wagon. I never went through treatment, never went through detox. I'm very rare from what I understand. I detoxed in this car. That was my detox, was Casa de Jose. I'm in this car for a week, just shaking. And I'm still living. I wasn't living in the car, but I'm still driving this car, and I'm 9 months sober, and I'm really sober. Really, really happy to be sober, right? And I'm listening, and I'm in this conference, and people were like on the edge of their seats. The woman was foul-mouthed, but she had the most incredible spiritual message, which doesn't ring well. It's like, how can you be foul and spiritual at the same time? And I'm not going to do that this morning, so you can relax. But everybody was on the edge of their seat. Except for me. I had made a decision to drink. So I'm outside. I left the meeting just a little bit early, and I'm outside, and I'm trying to find my car. And I'm in this parking lot, and all I found was like, you know, when you don't fit And I'm looking for this 63 Ford Falcon station wagon, standing there with all this stuff going on, and I'm angry. And this boob came walking up to me. You know the boobs that are really happy to be sober? And they want to spread the message of joy and kindness and love and patience and tolerance. And I'm standing there with my arms crossed, and he goes, "What's wrong? I've never seen you before. What's your name?" I said, "It's Joe." And he goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm trying to find my car. I got to go get a drink." He says, "What's wrong?" I said, "I can't take this stuff anymore. I hate everybody. I hate the fellowship of AA. This is ridiculous. I don't want to be sober. I can't stand this stuff." And this boob stood there and told me his story. And I don't know how long it went on, but it seemed like it was a torturous forever. If you're new, you know what that is, torturous forever. And then he goes, "You drive a little Ford Falcon?" I didn't tell him I drove a Ford Falcon. He goes, "Yeah." I go, "Yeah." He goes, "There it is right over there." He says, "I found your car." I said, "How'd you know that?" He goes, "Because my car's that one, and there's only two left in the parking lot." Yeah. He goes, "How you doing? Can I... You want? No, I'm fine. You want a drink? No, I'm good, man. I don't know what happened there." I'm telling you, folks, it takes a second to change somebody's life. I didn't want God to send an Eskimo. I wanted him to send me like a tow truck. You know, like, I wanted something bigger than a boob. I didn't want a boob, you know. And if he didn't stop, like you heard it all, I wouldn't have been up here tonight. He stopped, and he goes, "How are you doing?" And I go, "I don't know." I go, "Where do you go to meetings?" And I go, "Here." And then he goes, "Let me take you to some meetings." And he took me to some meetings where I found the music that I've loved in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're going to meetings and you don't like the message, go to another meeting. It's not the meeting's fault. There's some bad AA meetings, trust me. I know there are. My friend Diana goes, "I've been to an awful lot of AB meetings." I go, "What the hell's an AB meeting?" She goes, "I don't know, but it's not an AA meeting." And there's some crap going on in there, you know, and they're the happy, sober people that want to share. "I'll tell you how to be sober. I don't know why I'm staring at you, but it's fun, you know." You know, I didn't know this was going to happen to me. I didn't know I was going to be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, because I told you I literally loved drinking. I was born and raised in an Irish Catholic family, six boys, Kevin, Brian, Gerard, Joe, John, and Philip. Mom passed away last year at 100 years old. Dad passed away when I was 12 at 47 years old. He came home I always wanted to be a pilot. And I had two big cries over this week. I had a lot of them, but the first one was when Danny's dad put his head on his shoulder. And the second one was when listened about the pilot stuff, because it brought back my memories of Dad. I said, "Dad, I want to be..." He says, "I'm going to take you up on a plane on Sunday. We're going to teach you how to fly." God knows, didn't you know he died on that Sunday? I found him dead in bed. And I've never learned how to fly. I've never learned how to fish. His dad was going to teach me how to fish. You talked about the fishing as well, you know. But I need to get over that sort of stuff. I don't think I fit in anywhere. So I had this family of six boys, and I didn't fit in that family. And Dad used to come home from work, and we'd all have dinner every night. We'd have dinner every night of the week, and he'd sit there, and he would sing we'd be upstairs doing whatever we're doing as kids, and he'd start singing, "Jello, Jello, good for you, Jello, Jello, good for you." And we'd all come walking down like little goofballs. We'd sit down at the table, and, you know, everybody had their chair, and we would sit, and he made sure that we were all together. We all had a fellowship. And when he passed away, all that music stopped. And it didn't start again until I actually joined the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I came in here angry. I came in here resentful. I came here bitter. I came in here hurt. I came in here grieving for something I didn't know I was grieving about. And when I started putting these steps and these traditions into my life, something changed. And I thought it was you. I thought, I've got an inventory in the back of my book. My sponsor, we talked last week, he says, "You need to write an inventory." I wrote it on the way. It's here in the back of the book. We're going to share it either tomorrow. That I continually write inventories. And when I was first new, the inventory was huge. Oh, my God. Oh, they're huge. And they take forever. Now when you write an inventory, how long does it take? As long as it takes. You pick up the pen, and you know, the best technology that we don't use in Alcoholics Anonymous is a pen and paper. We don't use it anymore. We use these goofy things. You know, we're all like, Jesus, can't I just do it on the, don't you have an app for this? Why do I have to go to a conference for this? This is, you know, give me an app, you know? There's something about that technology that separates me from you. And I tell you, it's crazy. A couple of conferences ago, I stood up and I go, you know, these things are ruining Alcoholics Anonymous. I was on this alcohol ruin, because every time you pick this up, the meeting is no longer important. And as I said that, the phone rang. I forgot to turn it off. I'm at the podium, right? And it was June G calling me, if you know June. And within seconds, June knew what had just happened from the podium. Within seconds, she says, I've already heard, Joe, I already heard. So it was like, well, I was trying to get everybody to stop doing that sort of stuff. But, you know, along the way, it was like, it was just, you know, when I was drinking, it was really cool. When I first started drinking, I was just this, I literally had long hair, believe it or not. I had hair. I had showed a couple of people my picture. I had just a mop of red mop. It wasn't curly, it was just, and I used to pot it. You know, when you ever see people that you pot their hair and it's really thick, so it looks like this, you know, it's just, you know, and it just looks so stupid, and I just wanted to be like everybody else, to be able to go like this. You know? I could never, even when I went in the pool, it just went blop, you know. Couldn't even do it. You know? And then the pimples were everywhere. You know, and then we didn't call it bullying then. We just called it being kids. They had to point out my hair, which I knew, and my pimples, which I knew all about. And I just struggled with that all the time. My dad found me. I was 11 years old, I think. I'm in the bed. Uncurl had just been created. I don't know if you guys ever heard of Uncurl. It was this product that removed the curls. They were mostly for women. I'm sitting in the bedroom, and I have this package of Uncurl. And my dad walks in. He goes, what are you doing with that? And my dad was as bald as I am now. And I go, I want to get rid of the curls. And he goes, it doesn't work. I go, how do you know? He goes, look, it doesn't work. I tried it. It doesn't work. Live with it. I can't live with it. You know, so it was just, so I came in here, I was a kid feeling different. I was always a kid feeling different. But then one day, somebody gave me a bottle of Falstaff beer. Now that it's not even made anymore. I don't even know when it was made, but it was just, and I had a bottle of beer, and halfway through it, I am feeling pretty good. I don't have pimples. I don't have red curly hair. Something, there was a bit of wit coming out of me. And I was 14, 12, I don't know how old I was. But I'll tell you what, I couldn't drink much of it. A half a bottle and I'm toast. So what happens? Everybody starts making fun of me because I can't drink very much. And I didn't know what a resentment was till I got sober. But from that moment till I got sober, I had a resentment about everybody that laughed at me. And I'm going to prove to you that I can drink a lot. And I proved it to them. And it got me to the point where this guy said, there'll come a time, Joe, when you're done with drinking, you ask some power greater than yourself for help. You'll never have to take another drink as long as you live. Oh, I was done. My friend Melvin, I'm drinking with him one night, and I said, Melvin, I'm an alcoholic. And Melvin was a great thinker. Melvin passed away a couple years ago back in Boston. He goes, Joe, you can't be an alcoholic. Why can't I? He says, because if you're an alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic, and I am not an alcoholic. Oh, my God, thank you, Melvin. I don't know what was got into my head, you know, because it kind of started to consume me. And what was consuming me was the people in the comedy club that were sober members of AA carrying a message that I didn't even know they were carrying. They were making something really attractive to me that I didn't know was attractive. They were sober. They weren't sober. They were sober. They were going, Joe, how are you doing? I didn't know how to answer that question. You don't ask me how to answer that question. Why do you want to answer that question? They go, well, we notice you're a little anxious. Well, I'm anxious because the bar is full. My God, I can't take care of all these people all by myself. No, this is something, is you okay? I'm fine. Will you leave me alone? Don't sit at my bar anymore. Go sit at the table. I don't want you at my bar. Get away. And I would go into the cooler to get a case of beer to fill up the beer chest. And as I'm back there, I'm doing a little, you know, something that, and just to pick me up a little bit, and I'd come back out and I'd feel a little better, but that would wear off. And they would come back up at the bar and they would stare at me. You know the alcoholic stare, like, if you need help, I'm here for you, man. I'm really here for you. Really, is there anything you want to talk about? No, no, no. And then one time I said, you guys go to meetings? They go, yeah, we go to meetings. We carry the message of hope to people. What? Hope? And I was just full of contempt. And I was angry. But I was curious. Because it was attractive to me. If they were sitting there going, Joe, you ought to go to AA. But there was something about their demeanor, something about, and I go, how are you doing? Well, we're not making a very good living, but we're doing what we love. What? And you go to meetings and you don't drink and you help other people. No, it doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for me. But the one night when I asked Dick for help, I said, Dick, I think I'm an alcoholic. That was a totally different conversation. I don't know if I fully conceded to my innermost self that I was alcoholic, but I knew there was something wrong. I knew there was something wrong, and this alcohol had stopped working for me. And when I said it to him, and he went and told his story, I don't know how long he told me his story, and then he said, there'll come a time, because it was a long time in between, then I'm going, oh my God, this is just Greek. It's just Greek. And he said, there'll come a time, and I didn't know when that time was, and my response to his, there will come a time, was to move out of the city and the state and the East Coast of United States and move to San Diego. That was my solution. God knows why. I didn't have a job. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know what I was going to do. I just got in the car with my brother, and we drove. And he dropped me off, and I ended up in San Diego. And then I called him 6 weeks later, my brother. I said, Jerry, I'm an alcoholic, man. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And he said, dude, I don't know what to tell you, but let me give you my wife. And he put his wife on the phone. And little did I know that when she was a kid, her dad was an alcoholic, and she used to go to Alateen. And she was a most wonderful woman up until that conversation. You want me to do what? And she was probably in an Al-Anon slip because she went and called Central Office, and they lived up in Santa Barbara. I'm in San Diego. She went and called Central Office and said, get him up here as quick as we can. We'll have somebody help him out. So they got on the phone back to me, and they said, get up here as soon as you can. I'm driving this 63 Ford Falcon station wagon, and it doesn't have any rear main seal, and it poured oil out the back of it like it was just gushing. And this is 1989, and this is after, you know, California had a lot of smog, and they cleaned up the roads a lot, and I'm driving up to Santa Barbara, and they had this big old steering wheel, and I'm driving this car, and I had to get Pep Boy oil, because I used to get used oil, because I used to stop every 10 or 15 miles and put another quart of oil in it. God knows we don't fix things. No, we just repair, you know, we're just like, I'm just trying to work with it. So I'm driving up to Santa Barbara, and every once in a while, the red light, it was just like the whole thing of my life. I'm not drinking, but the red light is flashing. Danger, 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 and I pull over, and I put the oil in, and I get start driving again, and the smoke would be pouring up the back, and people are going by giving me the finger honk on the horn. Leave me alone. I'm going to get sober. I'm going to get sober. You know, and it's crazy. And I got up there, and I'm talking to this man named Howard in the central office, and he's sitting there, and he's on a chair, and he's rocking on a chair. And I'm getting really pissed off because he's kind of really nice, and I'm a little anxious. And he says, tell me your story. I don't know, how do you tell your story? How do you tell your story when you're, and I don't know what I told. It's almost like going to confession. Bless me, Father, I touched myself 16 times. It was a lot. You know, it was just crazy stuff. And then he goes, I said, am I an alcoholic? I wanted the stamp of approval from AA, you know. And he's just sitting here going, Joe, I've been sober for 29 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. 29 years without a drink. And he says, I just retired as a captain for Shell Oil Company. I was a captain on a merchant marine ship. You got to be kidding me. I wanted to be a merchant marine. I hate you. And I'm sitting there. I go, how'd you become a merchant marine? He says, I went to the Merchant Marine Academy. Oh, you went to school? Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm not going to do that. I go, how'd you get 29 years of sobriety? One day at a time. Come on, give me something better than that. He goes, well, I go to meetings. There's a meeting tonight. The guy telling his story tonight at the Alano Club. Why don't you go down there? He says, I can tell you're scared to death. What do you mean I'm scared? I'm not scared of nothing. Meeting? I'm not going to a meeting. I'll go. Sure, I'd love to. I had no intention of going to a meeting. You know that. I had no intention of walking in that room. And I went to the meeting last night. My brother Jerry, dude, took me to the meeting. And we get in there, and it was the first time I was ever in a meeting, and it was like crazy. And there was a speaker just like this. And the guy started talking. I looked over at Jerry. He was a year older than me, and he's sensitive. He's crying. I go, what's wrong? He said, this is unbelievable, man. I go, unbelievable is stupid. And he's crying through the whole thing. He said, geez, Joe, I hope you can get this. And then at the end, you know, they do the Lord's Prayer, and we didn't know that. If you're new, you don't know there's going to be circling in the room, and you're going to shake people's hands and grab them. And we're sitting there waiting, what's going to happen now? And people are all circling around, grabbing their hands, and somebody goes, over here. Oh, we go over there. So we go over there, and I touch the person next to me, and I grab Jerry's hand, and something happened. It was like an electric shock went through me. It went through me. I think when one alcoholic reaches out and touches an alcoholic, it's even more powerful. That's the connection to this power we don't know. And I looked over at him, and he's bawling again. He's bawling. And I'm angry, but I'm feeling something I've never felt. I felt like a power come through me, through you guys. I didn't understand it. I didn't like it. But there was something so attractive about it. I kept going to meetings. I didn't go to a meeting all the time. I went down to Long Beach. I went to Long Beach for meetings and for about 6 months. And I remember it was crazy. I just would go to meetings and, oh, I hated everybody and everything. And it was just not working out for me. And when that woman, 9 months sober, Grady O was telling a story, and then Paul came into my life, and Paul is still in my life. It's been 30 years, and he is my best. I literally believe he doesn't even live in San Diego. He lives in Sea Ranch on the northern coast of California. And we talk all the time. And I tell him all the things about me. I have a sponsor that knows all about me, but your friends can really fill in when that sponsor's not there, when you can't. Your friends, your trusted advisors, the people that you like, you have a home group. You go to a home group for a reason, to be connected to home, to be connected to love. To be connected to love. There's a great acronym for love, and I got to talk about it. It's L is listen. Listen to it. Sometimes, especially for the newcomers, it takes forever to get to the point. Don't rush them to get to the point. You can turn them around and walk them outside a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they'll never come back like we were talking about. There'll be a moment. But if you can just listen to what they say, and then, overlook all the weirdness about it. Overlook the weirdness. And these are even, you can do this in your regular, overlook. And V is value everything that's being said. Value it. Give it some gump. And the E is encourage. Dream bigger than you could ever dream in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's 106 people that are under 5 years of sobriety. 5 years of sobriety. Scott was talking about the tapes. Tom Brady Jr.'s talk on emotional sobriety, I heard in 1972, I believe. If you guys want, don't go home without getting that. He talks about 5 years menopause. There's 5 years of sobriety. People come like, is this it? You know, because you come in here expecting something. You come in here for peace, right? But it's P-I-E-C-E that you're in here for, right? And we're talking P-E-A-C-E. No, that doesn't work for me. But if you're in here for PIECE, that's going to get up and walk away from you pretty quick. It really is. But the P-E-A-C-E, that peace that's deep down inside, it's of every man, woman, and child. It's covered up by pomp and circumstance and worship of other things. And those are the resentments. Those are the things we wish we had. Those are the things, if it, in how it works, we hear a lot of people come up here. I was talking to Pat about little pet peeves. I get a lot of little pet peeves of people say, I'm going to come up here and share in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And then Mr. Goofball comes up and goes, it doesn't say that in the big book. You know, what do you mean? It says that I read it every time. I go, I know, that's what you think you hear. But it says we share in a general way what we were like, what happened and what we are like now. And my sponsor said, I want you to turn that into the first person. I tell you in a general way what I was like, what happened, what I'm like. That there's a huge difference between what I was like and what it was like. It was like is the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. What I was like is the things that I get uncovered, discovered, and discarded in my inventory process. When I get my defects of character, when I can understand that I'm driven by 100 forms of fear and self-delusion. That's a lot. 100 forms of fear and whatever that word is again, I lost it. Delusion, 100 forms is a lot. And it's just amazing. And if you have somebody that you're working with that helps you understand those 100 forms of fear, those can come down to your defects of character. Those things that helped protect you from being a scared kid or a scared girl or whatever it was that you didn't get when you were a kid, those are the it things. If you focus on the it, that's the material life. And if you're focusing on the material life to get better, it's going to take a long, long, long time. But if you focus on that spiritual life, and you plug into some power that's greater than yourself, plug it in. Even if it is the group that you're going to, even if it's this boob that walks up to you and says, "Hey, how you doing?" That might be your first connection to the power greater. Even if it's that time when my brother touched my hand, I was connected to a power that was greater. I was so riddled with fear that I didn't know what fear was. I wasn't afraid to go into battle. I wasn't afraid to fight a fire. I wasn't afraid of it, but I was afraid to return things to Costco. Crazy, huh? I had a trunk full of crap. I was so embarrassed to talk about that in meetings. Anything you're not telling us, Joe? Oh, Jesus, I got a 5-pound tub of peanut butter in my car. And I bought at Costco, and I don't like peanut butter, you know? But it was a great deal. Why don't you return it? Oh, Christ, what are they going to think of me? They're not going to think of you. They're really not. Oh, I can't. No, I can't. Can I show you the trunk? And they open the trunk, and they go, what are you doing with the vacuum? It was a great deal. Why don't you return it? And suitcases? What are you doing with suitcases? You're not traveling. Oh, God, but it was a great deal. Let's go down to Costco and we'll return. Oh, Jesus, I can't do this. Please don't do this to me. I can't do it. And he goes, I'm going to show you something. And we go down to Costco. I just felt totally rejected because I told the story and I was embarrassed. But it was a secret. It was a secret. And I go in and he goes, it says entrance and it says returns. It doesn't say rejects. It says returns. Really? He says, let's go in here. And you return what you brought. But how will they know? They'll know. And they go, how you doing? Good. I have to return some stuff. Sure, bring it up here. How would you like that? In a credit card or you like it in cash? I want cash. What are you, crazy? You know, well, let's go buy some. No, come on. Let's get out of here. We're terrible. Give us a little bit. Oh, I'm going. You know, it's like, wow, they got, yeah, so it's that's the kind of fear I had. That's the kind of fear I had. And I didn't know I had that kind of fear until I identified with somebody doing the same thing I'm doing, talking about it from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't identify with everybody in this room, and you can't identify with me. But if there's one person in this room that is just doubting that AA works, and maybe something I say, maybe somebody in that line this morning, the line last night, if you were dancing, if you got snack bar, if you're just trying to get a CD, if something somebody said that gets you get a little bit of hope, we've done our job. We've done our job. A lot of times we want the newcomer to do the job. The newcomer doesn't know what the language of the heart is. The newcomer doesn't realize that we're shaking hands because my sponsor said, I want you to go to the meeting and shake a newcomer's hands because you're driving me crazy. You need to help somebody. But the newcomers are nuts. I know they are, but you go understand that they are nuts just like you're not. Go shake their hand and say hi and call them back. You don't understand. I got to get a job. But Jesus Christ, you leave me alone. And you go and you say, hi, how you doing? Good, how you doing? You look like hell. Oh, I hate this place. You do? Yeah, I hated it too. You did? How'd you get through it? Well, let me tell you my story, you know? And all of a sudden, you got two more boobs to the Fellowship of AA, you know? And two boobs are always better than one, you know? It's like, so I don't know how this works. I don't know. This is the spiritual mystery of Alcoholics Anonymous. This isn't a magic trick. A lot of people say there's a magic in AA. It's a mystery in AA. Why one alcoholic talk and another alcoholic works? Why did Bill and Bob go to I can't remember his name now, number three, Bill D, number three. Why did that happen? And why was Bill D at that exact moment in time ready? He was done drinking. And Bill and Bob, who just wanted to be sober, were carrying a message of hope so they would stay sober. And then Bill D, number three, they say he went on to be one of the greatest 12-steppers as well, but he was so anonymous. He just loved doing this stuff. And we all do that stuff. This is for fun and for free. We heard about Norm Alpe. If you want to get another CD, get Norm Alpe's stuff. Seconds and inches. He talks about seconds and inches. 1 second more or 1 foot over, things could be totally different. Totally. If that boob, Paul, didn't walk up to me that night and say, Joe, how are you doing? And I responded with, I hate this place. If that did not happen, you wouldn't have me up here tonight. It was seconds and inches. I was desperate, and somebody with a desperate finder was there. That's who, where's the desperate one? You know, it's like, we come in, you know, there's a lot of people that just love being sober, and there's people in this room that do not like being sober. But I hope that after this weekend, you actually get to the point where I think I want to love being sober. Because that's what it's really about. Love and service is our code. It's our code. Love people not because they're alcoholic, in spite of their alcoholism. Love them just because I love being an alcoholic. And be of service, maximum service to God and our fellows. Maximum to me might be not the same amount of maximum to these guys up here. But that's not to be compared. Your maximum service is what you're willing to do and be able to do to carry this message to some other person. The second person that came up here, I don't know if you guys know that. That was the guy that we asked if he wanted to ride to the meeting. The second person, the newcomer with 2 weeks, man. We stopped and we said, hey, would you like a ride to the meeting? But I'm going to tell you, he did say, no, I like to walk and I can do some service along the way. But I'll tell you something, brother. If somebody does from Alcoholics Anonymous, reaches out and say, can I give you a ride? Jump in the car. Jump in the car. It'll change your life, man. Don't be afraid. Because I love Alcoholics Anonymous more than I think I love my own silly life. And I love it because I'm able to give it away for fun and for free. And we're all boobs. We're just carrying them. We go, hey, can we get you over to the meeting? I'd love to, man, because it's just seconds and inches. It's just a moment, and a moment will change your life. A moment will absolutely change your life. I forget how long I go to because I got to get to the airport. How long do I? Huh? Okay. So anyway, where was I? Yeah, you guys and your boobs, yeah. My own life changed in Alcoholics Anonymous because I when I told you I didn't like the fellowship, so what I did was I read a lot. I read a lot. I've read all the history books. I continue to read all the history books. And I read non-conference-approved literature. It's okay to read non-conference-approved literature. Trust me. My God. People go, what are you reading that for? Is that conference-approved? No. Do you know what conference-approved means? It's approved so they can sell it. That's really basically what it is. And I read a lot of stuff, spiritual stuff. And whenever somebody mentions something like the CDs that Scott was talking about, I hope if somebody gives you, and all we're doing is passing along what was passed along to us. I used to drive, when I first got sober, I was trained to be a deep sea hot hat underwater welder diver, right? So I could make $200, $500, $700 million a year. I could make more money than I could ever make in my life. I couldn't get a job because I had a really bad back. And I'm sitting in a meeting and I'm whining about this. My sponsor said, why don't you go to the meeting and talk about it and stay? So I went to this meeting and I'm whining about it, that I couldn't get a job because I could make $100,000, $200,000, $700,000 a year. And then I went to this meeting and this girl sitting next to me, she says, I work for a company downtown San Diego that are hiring like crazy. It's a clothing company, and we'd love to have you there. I go, you know, I'm a hothead, underwater, deep sea welder, diver, and I could make $100,000 to $200,000 a year. She says they're paying $5.20, 25 cents an hour plus commission. I go, I need a job really bad. So I went down and I got the job. And I started selling men's underwear on the phone. Yeah. For 2.5 years, newly sober, for a company called International Male, M-A-L-E. And this company, do you remember that stupid show Borat? Do you remember that ugly yellow thing he wore? We sold those. And we sold men's thongs. You were one of the customers, weren't you? No? No? And I was like, oh, you guys, I can't do this. I'm an underwater welder, you know. I'm a hothead diver. Men's thongs. You got to be kidding me. And for 2.5 years, I didn't know how to stick around. I didn't know how to show up. I didn't know how to stay put. And I looked around this room that I was in, this boiler room, that's really what it was, and 90% of the people were in Alcoholics Anonymous. 90% of the people. We had a fellowship that I didn't crave yet, and it was saving my life. It was saving my life. And about 3 years into that, I had a relationship that fell apart. And I, when I tell you I didn't like anybody, there was certain people that I ran into along the way that I liked. Boob number one, and then boob number two was Denny that I worked with. I ended up working when I stopped working for the clothing company, I worked for the Old Globe Theater in downtown San Diego. I was a maintenance guy. And there was this guy that had really long blonde hair, and he was really cool. And we had a Christmas party, and we're sitting there, and he's drinking a diet, sugar-free diet Coke. And I'm drinking a water. And I go, you can't get much of a buzz off of that. He says, about as much of a buzz as you can get off the water. And then he turned to me, he says, you a friend of Bill W's? I said, I am. He goes, let's leave this party and talk. And he became number two. And Denny was just a crazy guy. This is the guy that went to Brooks Institute. He was a Vietnam vet they hadn't really started dealing with PTSD at the level they are now. And Denny was suffering from PTSD from Vietnam for years. And he would go ballistic, sober. And I liked him for that, you know? And then he moved out of town. He went up to Santa Barbara to Brooks Institute to become a photographer, and I hadn't seen him, and I didn't know how to contact him. It was long before cell phones, so there was no way to get in hold of anybody. And this one day I had a relationship break up, and I didn't have a fellowship that I craved. I was so angry and so separated and so isolated inside of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is a terrible place to be. And I got in my motorcycle, because I used to ride the motorcycle all the time, and I says, I'm going to kill myself. I had literally decided to kill myself. And I said, if I go south, I'll get towards Tijuana, and the traffic isn't very heavy towards Tijuana. If I go north, I'll get towards L.A., and the traffic is really classic for killing yourself on a motorcycle. So I'm flying up 5, flying up the road, going like crazy, in and out, zipping, trying to hit everybody. And I go by this 72 Chevy Vega with this long blonde hair flowing out the window. And Denny drove a 72 Chevy Vega. And I pulled back, and I pulled back so he could see me. I had a full face mask. He couldn't see me, and he's giving me the finger because he thought I was yelling at him. And I put my shield up, and he said, Joe, pull over. And we pulled over in the middle of the 5 North in La Jolla. He goes, my God, I've been trying to find you. Really? He says, let's go to the coffee shop. We went to the coffee shop in La Jolla, and he goes, Joe, I can't believe this. Did you pray this morning? I said, I haven't prayed in a long time, Denny. He said, I prayed this morning that I could get in touch with you somehow. I went, what? I was going up to Brooks Institute in Santa Barbara, and I know your brother lives in Santa Barbara, and I need somebody up in Santa Barbara that I could connect with. And I asked God to find you. He goes, how you doing? I said, Denny, I was out to kill myself. He said, no, you weren't. You were out to find me. And it was just crazy. It was just, I was about 4 years sober. And I never, and we sat there, he says, what are you killing yourself for? I said, a relationship. He says, ah, Christ, we all have relationships break up. But I said, but not me. And the thing was, I didn't want to tell him it was a relationship with a man. I was so embarrassed by that. And he did something to me that when I tell you it's the touching, he reached out and he grabbed my hand. He said, Joe, it's okay, man. That's not going to change my relationship with you. And I said, Danny, I'm so afraid. He said, no, you're not afraid, you're alone. Don't be alone in Alcoholics Anonymous, Joe. It's the worst place to be alone. And he left, and I started joining the Fellowship of AA. I started getting rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. I started memorizing stuff, and I started telling people they were saying stuff wrong. I was starting to quote them, that they were misquoting stuff. And I started, like Denny was saying, I turned into a bleeding deacon for years. You know, I was right. And then when they knew I was right, I knew they were mad at me. See, and then I was even righteous. Yeah. And when you become righteous, nobody wants to be your friend, you know. And I didn't like you still. They didn't like you still. And then several years later, when I was 8 years sober, I'm sponsoring people and all this stuff, and I'm still working. I was working at the underwear place, and I got really sick, really sick. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I was going to the Alcathon. It was New Year's Eve. I went to the Alcathon, and I'm just sick. And everybody, you know, we were talking about this. When you're sick, everybody has a solution. Yeah, keep them to yourself. It's like, really, it's like, and I had been gone to the VA, and I was being tested for all sorts of stuff, and they just couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And I, on New Year's Day, my eighth birthday, I got a call from the VA, and they said, Mr. Conner, you got to come into the VA. You tested positive for pneumocystis pneumonia, and we need to treat you right away. And I got over to the VA, and the doctor said, how long have you been HIV positive? I said, I had no idea I was HIV positive. She says, we just gave you that news over the phone? I said, yeah. And then I went, Doc, I've been in sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous for 8 years. And they always talk about surrender. And I never really knew what that meant until this moment in time. I said, I want to live more than I ever wanted to live before. I don't know why I got this. I don't know why this is happening to me. And she says, you're incredibly sick. I don't know if you're going to pull through this. I was really, really sick at the time. And I called Bus, my sponsor, from the hospital. I said, Bus, he says, how you doing, dude? Happy birthday. I said, Bus, I'm dying. He said, you can't die. I'm giving you a cake Friday night at the men's meeting. I said, Bus, I'm dying. He goes, no, you're not. No, you're not. I'll pick you up even, and we'll take you to the meeting. And I walked into the meeting. There was a greeter. I don't like greeters. You guys have greeters. I don't like greeters. I greet them, but I don't like them. It's just like, it brings back all my fear and all my doubt. And I walked in, and there was a greeter at the door. His name was Steve. He says, Joe, you look like shit. I said, let me tell you about my week. And he embraced me. I don't want to say the word hug, because there's a difference between a hug and an embrace. He embraced me, and he said, I love you. No, you don't. I love you. And I sat down with my sponsor. He said, how you doing? I said, I hate these people. And in the course of the meeting, that he sat down and he told a guy, 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 and then they're all looking at me. Love you, man. I didn't know what love was until this happened to me. The embraceable love, the kind of love that rockets you into the fourth dimension of existence. And I get up there and I took the cake and I told the guys my story. I told them I was afraid to tell them I was gay. I told them all this stuff, and I was just, it did not make a difference. It didn't make a difference. And I have to tell this story. Like Scott was saying, I have to tell my story. I don't have to tell a story. I could tell a story, but I have to tell my story. And it's maybe because somebody else in this room is struggling with something like that. You're struggling with a seemingly hopeless, it doesn't have to be alcoholism after you're sober. We struggle with seemingly hopeless states of mind and body, and we do not want to let people in. When you do that, you will find a life that Bill Wilson calls as indescribably wonderful. If you sit in here with your arms crossed with the best stay away look on your face, you're going to get exactly what you're putting out. But when you take your arms and you put them down by your side and you let us embrace you and bring you into the fellowship of AA and rocket you into that fourth dimension of existence, a rocket takes a lot of power to get off the ground. You do not have that power. You are powerless. But when you plug into the fellowship of AA, we'll give you the power to get to those places that you want to go. Those dreams that you don't think you that are any. If somebody told you you can't do something, walk away from them. If you tell somebody you want to do something and they say, how can I help you get there? Embrace that person. Bring them into your life. Help them get you to that next destination. That they'll help you get there. If you don't let people know what you want to do, you will get exactly what you're getting. And that is no thing. Just let us know whether you're struggling with Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't like Alcoholics Anonymous, tell us. Don't leave AA and go to Shannon's Pub and say, give me a gin and tonic, because I just left a goddamn convention and those people suck. But if you were to stand right here after this meeting and say that same thing, I say, well, come on, let's go to Denny's. Denny's? I don't know if you guys got Denny's up here. You probably do. But I firmly believe that Denny's has saved a lot of people from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. We knock it. Yeah. But that moon over my hammy, man, try it, man. It's pretty good. And I believe that is really the stuff. That's really the stuff. I'm going to read one thing out of the book, and then I'm going to shut up, and then we're going to go. We got a plan. Oh, I had a thing, the Members Eye View. If you've never seen this pamphlet, it's probably one of the best things ever written in Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me read a couple of things from this, too, because I think I got it. I'm okay. I got a couple of minutes. Especially for you new guys. There's a widely held belief in AA that if a newcomer will simply continue to attend meetings, something will finally rub off on you. And the implication, of course, is that something which rubs off will be this so-called miracle of AA. Now, there is no doubt in my mind that many people in AA accept this statement quite literally. I have observed them over the years that they faithfully attend meetings, faithfully waiting for something to rub off, in quotes. The funny part about it is that something is rubbing off on them, death. They sit there week after week while mental, spiritual, and physical rigor mortis sets in. There must come a day, it seems to me, when every alcoholic in and out of AA finally sits down in the presence of his enemies. When he does, he will be amazed to discover that he is attending a meeting of one himself. The day the alcoholic in AA realizes that his enemy is within, that the tigers are largely creatures of his own design and lurk in his own unconsciousness, that is the day when, for him, AA becomes what I believe its founders meant to be, a flight into reality. I hope you guys get that. If you're struggling with AA, if you've got time and you're struggling with AA, there's people that have lots of time in Alcoholics Anonymous that are afraid to tell somebody that they don't like what's happening. Tell them. Let it out. Tell your sponsor. Tell your groupies. Tell your group. Get another group. Change the group. Find the music that you love. Don't blame where you're at. Get rid of the word blame from your speech and thought. Be responsible for your recovery. And you will never be disappointed with Alcoholics Anonymous. I was disappointed in Alcoholics because I was expecting something from it. When I started giving it to Alcoholics Anonymous, bam, I was rocketed into that fourth dimension of existence. It's a paradox that happens around here. And I'm going to tell you why it's a paradox. And this is the promises that, and I'm going to read it just a little differently to you. Since I was painstaking about this phase of my development, I was amazed before I was halfway through. I know a new freedom and a new happiness. I do not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door. I comprehend the word serenity. I comprehend the word serenity. It is P-E-A-C-E. It is peace of mind. It is peace. It is joy of living. It is all these things. No matter how far down the scale I'll see how my experience can benefit others. Not my program, my experience. And I think there's a big difference. And in that experience, you're going to hear about my program of recovery. You're going to hear about the things that I do. But that's my experience. My experience is so powerful when I can share it with somebody. And that's called identification, when I do those things. That feeling of uselessness disappears, and self-pity, it disappears. It does when you're working with other people, not expecting other people to work with you. Turn it around and become a giver. I lost interest in selfish things, and I gained interest in my fellows. I sincerely started having conversations with people and looking them in the eye and go, tell me your story. Tell me what's going on. Please, let it out. Let me be a friend of yours. Let me become connected to you. That economic insecurity left me. I still have economic insecurity. Trust me, I'm pretty bad about that, and sometimes I have to really work on it. And I intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. I told you about going to Costco. That was a situation that used to baffle me. What am I going to do with it? And then I realized that God was doing for me, is doing for me, and will continue to do for me those things I can't do for myself. That's joy of living. That's joy of living. But action is the key word, and I have to take the action to get to where I want to go. If I'm happy where I'm at, make some changes where I'm at. I do prayer and meditation every single morning. I do it every single morning, and I love prayer and meditation. But real, like the prayers we were talking about over the weekend, the prayer from the heart. Oh, there's so many things I want to say. The prayer of the heart, the desert fathers that went out to the desert, these old monks that just, if you want to get connected, you just like silence, which is ironic. Here I am telling you a story, but silence is one of the greatest gifts you can give to somebody else. Silence. Just be there for them. Oh my gosh, it's just amazing what can happen when you change. And you change, you transform through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't transform by thinking about things. You transform by taking some action, one after the other, and helping somebody else. And my second sponsor said, you don't complete the 12 steps until you hurt somebody else's fifth step. I was like, what? Yeah, when you do that, when you get that thing that somebody else doesn't want to give up, and you keep it and you never let it out, it's called trust. And in trust we find love. And when we find love, we find God. And we find sobriety and we find joy. If you don't think this deal works, please try it. If you don't think God will help you, all you got to do is ask. All you got to do is ask. I am so glad that I was here this weekend. I found some joy. I found lots of love. And I hope you guys did too. And if you didn't get it yet, tell somebody. Because it's pissa, as we say back home in Boston. It's wicked pissa to be sober. Thank you very much.